afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host. Gee, it's been so long. Maybe I forgot. Nah, I'd never forget his name. Dave Allen is back joining us this Tuesday. We welcome him back. And we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary for today's economic and political events. And that day is Tuesday, September 28th, 2021. Hey, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Good to be back.
Welcome back.
Happy Good Neighbor Day, by the way. It's also National Drink a Beer Day. So you know what that means. My wife and I are having a beer with our neighbors tonight.
Well, isn't that special?
Exciting stuff in the world. Or in our country, anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, I heard something. I couldn't believe it. I think it was actually on the Weather Channel, how they were actually talking about climate change and how it's affecting the taste of beer. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? Good grief. It is, you know. Anyway, it's just...
Beer and wine, not far behind. I mean, certainly the California wines have been affected by the wildfires.
They're not all from global warming, though, either. So, you know, so
yes.
They were trying to tag it to global warming.
Get the beer drinkers on your side.
Divide
and conquer. Man, that's mean.
Anything else you'd like to say before we get started?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I can ask the question, did you know on this day in 1781 that 16,000 American and French troops began the siege of Yorktown in Virginia? Just 1 month later, when the British colonial forces were defeated there, the guns fell silent as the Revolutionary War ended and American independence was all but guaranteed.
Well, we better remember that because, I'm not so sure it was guaranteed, but here we are today. You got to work for it.
Didn't say for how long.
Let's go ahead and take a peek at gold today. Well, there was lots of pressure on gold today. And I would like to think that we might have some sort of a rebound here, but the dollar got kind of strong with that 10-year yield popping again today. And so some pressure on gold, $16, $1,734. Silver was down 17 pennies at 22.54. Platinum was down 14 at 972, and palladium was down 84 at 1954. So certainly the precious metals sector got hit hard. But palladium was the biggest loser of the day, being down 4.5%. I mean, gold wasn't even down 1%, so, and it was down the least compared to all the others. So, well, no, I take it back. Silver was down the least. It was down almost, 0.75%, and the gold was down shy of 1%. So, with that said, the USDX today was stronger by 0.33 at 93.75. Crude oil was down 71 cents at 74.74. Paper markets today, NASDAQ was down, 2.8%, the worst day since March. And, of course, they're all blaming it on the yield spike hitting the tech stocks. So we can start there today. The NASDAQ down 2.83%, 423 points at 14,546. The Dow was down 1.6%, 569 points at 34,299. And the S&P was down 90 at 4,352. The European markets were negative across the board with, let's see, the DAX was down 2%. The CAC was down 2%. Asia, you had the Nikkei, it was down just hardly anything. And let's see what those bonds did today. The bond 10-year yield popped 1.54%. That's really not that bad, Dave. It was 1.50 earlier or the end of last week. So I don't know if it was higher and had a little bit of reversal. But, yeah, it was a 3.6 basis points at 1.52 in midday trading after hitting 1.55 earlier in the day. The yield on the 30-year Treasury. 1.558. The yield on the 30-year Treasury bond added 7.6 basis points, spiking to 2%, 2.071. And yields move inversely to prices, and a 1 basis point is equal to a 0.01%. So I guess we're going to talk about that here, but we can go ahead and and, you know, Dave, it's funny. You know the word transitory.
Hey, one of my favorites.
I don't think it's going to be used much anymore by Mr. Powell, because he's saying that inflation is elevated and will likely remain so in coming months before moderating. So that doesn't sound too transitory to me, but...
Well, it could very well be that people will start talking about Mr. Powell as being transitory, end of his term approaches in February, and now with this trading scandal among two of his regional presidents, I think going to start to dominate the news, especially by folks like us. I think mainstream media, it'll be interesting to see if this gets some wheels on the networks, particularly in the midst of everything that's going on in Washington. But you know, just in terms of you know, the Federal Reserve and the attention it's getting for whether or not it's going to start to put the brakes on its bond purchases, and again with that, and Powell and a number of other Fed governor positions up for reappointment or otherwise.
Yeah, but you know what, Dave? What the heck did they expect was going to happen when the Fed was given the approval by everyone to buy up trillions of dollars in asset purchases from these corporations? So, I mean, what do you expect?
Well, I don't think anyone expected that two of the Fed presidents were going to engage in some case of significant stock trading at points of time when one or both of them were voting members of the Federal Open Market Committee. But you're absolutely right in terms of the bond purchases. People shouldn't be surprised, particularly here we are into the 18th month of massive QE. But this trading scandal has taken an ugly turn, and I don't think we know all of the details yet. We're going to talk a lot more about it in the third segment. But I know you had your own comments or opinions about
The scumbags.
There you go.
How's that for you? And here's another one. Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, told Pelosi this morning that Congress has just under 3 weeks to address the looming debt ceiling and avoid near certain economic calamity. We now estimate that Treasury is likely to exhaust its extraordinary measures if Congress has not acted to raise or suspend the debt limits by October 18th. At that point, we expect Treasury would be left with very limited resources that would be depleted quickly. Also, Yellen has testified before the Senate later this morning, warned in a statement to the lawmakers that failure to suspend the raise the debt limit would lead to the first ever U.S. default. And it is imperative that Congress swiftly addresses the debt. If it does not, America would default for the first time in history, she said again. And, you know, we know it's going to happen because we got debt too great to be paid. But is this the time? And that's the question we don't know. Is this the time they will default? I can't imagine that this is the time. But if they let it default, then certainly things are far worse than we are led to believe, you know, by the powers to be, Dave.
Well, you know, in a lot of respects, you know, if there's a default, and these things don't go hand in hand necessarily, but the way they're being structured by the Democrats right now, I mean, they're one and the same. The spending bill to keep the government from shutting down on Friday morning, a bill, provision to either suspend the debt limit or to raise it to pay off spending that's occurred in the last year of the Trump administration and so far in the first year of the Biden. But that's the least of the worries if there's a default. I mean, the bottom line is that no one knows what would happen. I mean, most people have an opinion about what would happen, and most of the language we've been hearing are these superlatives about the, you know, as you mentioned, one of the words, catastrophic, to quote Yellen, I believe, and there are a whole bunch of others too. I mean, we could probably spend a whole program talking about whether or not there should even be a debt ceiling, given that it's used really to provide funding for appropriations that have already been approved. I mean, in a theoretical sense, it's like, you know, it just doesn't make sense in some ways. But nothing else, it's just another time, and there's not a whole lot of it discussed anymore. It's just another time throughout the fiscal year where our elected representatives, I'm not sure if I say that tongue-in-cheek or not, Melody, talk about spending and revenues and deficits and debt. But look, you know for sure that this is all gamesmanship, and it's by both sides.
Yep.
And it's become at least an annual spectacle. Thank God we're not raising the limit, for 2, 3, 4, 6 months anymore. 2019 was the last time. It was a 2-year raise in the debt ceiling. But my own opinion is that I think that that limit will eventually be raised or suspended, and that the sovereign debt of the U.S. will not be defaulted on this time, if for no other reason than to protect the wallets of millionaire members of Congress.
Yep.
And their billionaire donors.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. And, you know, it's we talked about this yesterday. It's theatrics as usual. I don't think they should eliminate it. I mean, at least it does bring some sort of attention, because, you know, if they totally eliminate it, I mean, at least we get to talk about it every so often. And, but, you know, I don't know how they're going to get accountability back in to the government. How are they going to get? I mean, that's what gold did. Gold, you know, they had to be accountable for what they spent. And now it's just a free-for-all. You know, this $3.5 trillion, by the time it's done, it's going to be closer to $5 plus. I mean, they're always wrong on their budgeting to begin with. You know, and it's just, you know, kick the can down the road. But eventually, one day, they will not be able to pay the bills.
You talk about a wildfire out of control. Whew.
They will default.
We have met the enemy.
And we just don't know how they will default.
Yeah.
You know, I think they'll, I guess if you rewrite, you know, the treasuries, the values, that's a default.
Oh, yeah.
But there's different, I guess, I don't know how they would do it, but I mean, we had President Trump several times say that that's the only thing that they will be able to do, is to revalue those treasuries. So, and a third.
There goes the black swan, Melody.
Yeah. And, you know, a third of retirement accounts. What's in them, Dave? Treasuries. So right there, a third of it will be wiped out.
Yeah.
So yeah. Those retirement accounts. So anyway, so the big question is that this year, probably not, but unless something bigger is coming, and this would prove to be a minor distraction compared to what's coming. So let's move on. We already talked about the 10-year yield. Anything you'd like to add to that, Dave?
I don't think so. I mean, we know now that the 10 and the 30-year bonds are trading at their highest yield since earlier this year, the 5-year at its highest level since last year before the pandemic began. Now the question is this 1.5, 1.558 range for the 10-year that was hit earlier this morning before falling back very slightly? Is it going to continue to move up? You know, is it going to go up to 1.6, going to go up to 1.7 or more, you know, from the March high? That could force the Fed's hands. But with all this other stuff going on, all the other indicators, it is a delicate and difficult time for the Fed and other central banks, and they're not rising to the occasion.
You know, there's one thing that we haven't talked about in a very long time, and that's the LIBOR.
Yeah, you're right.
That's ending this year, this fall.
Yeah. It's,
next month.
It's supposed to be upon us.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we don't know how that's going to react to these yields. And, because I think at least with the LIBOR, there was some kind of control. Well, they did control the rates and so forth. So I don't know. It'll be, and now if you got multiple exchanges to where they can set the rates, I would think they would be going higher quicker. And I don't know if the Fed would be able to control them. I don't know. Oil prices, international oil benchmark Brent crude advanced for a sixth straight session today, jumping, it was above 80 for the first time since October 2018. Demand rebounding to some degree, and of course the supply remains tight. The West Texas Intermediate crude, the U.S. oil benchmark, also rose for a sixth straight day. That advanced about 1%. Both contracts are coming off five straight weeks of gains and is up more than 50% for 2021 so far. Wow. You're paying 50% more in your gas, maybe? We'll be right back. I hear the music. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. We'll be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter, and you can listen to these programs live at 4 o'clock at the top of the page. The only time that bar is active is at 4 o'clock Eastern time. So if you click on it any other time, it's not going to work. That's the live bar. Not the live bar rates, but the live listening bar at the website. So make sure you also sign up for our weekly newsletter. That's dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, or give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I think we've just about finished. I think this is interesting. North Korea fired an unidentified short-range missile into the sea early this morning, just minutes before Pyongyang called on the U.S. to end military activity around the Korean Peninsula. The South Korean military said the launch came at about 6:40 a.m. local time, adding that it was analyzing flight data to determine what type of weapon it may be. Yonhap News later added that the Japanese government said the missile appeared to be a ballistic missile. And that, of course, would violate the UN resolutions barring North Korea from developing or testing such devices. Like, they're going to really pay attention to that. So, this came just before the envoy to North Korea spoke before the UN and urged the U.S. to end its hostile efforts toward Pyongyang. And so the story continues, Dave.
I mean, North Korea has said in recent months that it would be open to talks with other nations again. We reported a couple of weeks ago, Kim Jong-un's sister, recently said that the North would consider meeting with South Korea to declare an official end to the Korean War. Although she cautioned that there was still work to be done there before the two nations could come to the table and presumably sign some sort of armistice or peace treaty. We're having a couple of big newspapers noting that the North has so far rebuffed any efforts by the Biden administration to restart talks until the U.S. issues full sanctions relief. And joint military drills with Seoul, and we know neither of them is coming anytime soon. Now, the North has tested several weapons now in recent weeks. The country said it tested new long-range cruise missiles on three separate occasions about 2 weeks ago. So something for certainly the intelligence community and us to boot to keep our eyes on, Melody.
All right. Well, you know, here's some good news.
What? Mm-hmm.
Some good news. Ford Motor Company. New $11 billion manufacturing plan. They unveiled this. Yeah. The biggest component of which will sit just outside Memphis. And is part of a much bigger effort to put the U.S. at the center of the electric vehicle. If you want to call it a revolution. Oh, that's because nowhere else in the world is going to be buying electric vehicles, except we'll be forced to buy them. But nowhere else in the world. So, you know, so hey, it's jobs. What can I say? According to Ford Executive Chair Bill Ford, the company's plan for an enormous facilities in North Tennessee and Kentucky employing a combined 11,000 workers are ambitious manufacturing efforts designed to minimize their environmental impact. But Ford said these investments will also help the U.S. build its own supply chain for batteries rather than continuing to import them from Asia. Yeah, do you think any of them are going to be buying electric vehicles? And that, they hope, will provide economic security, insulation from supply chain disruptions, and ultimately bringing down the price of EVs. So, hey, we can't find employees now. How are you going to find 11,000 workers in Tennessee and Kentucky? But anyway.
Sounds like a whole lot of training going to be going on real soon, or a lot of
they got to find
open positions.
Yeah, they got to find work for 120,000 Afghanistans and how many Haitians and how many Colombians and how many they got to find these people jobs. So they'll be training for those to work in these factories probably. But who knows? That's just my So kudos for them for building a plant. They don't know when they're going to begin it. Again, this could be, I don't know if it's image building type thing or, but we'll see, because there's no date.
No, I mean, to give you the impression, if it wasn't imminent, it was certainly, you know, one of those, if you were thinking within a year, I don't think you could be faulted, but that could be, perhaps that could be a tad optimistic. No.
We talked a little bit about this yesterday. The China's energy crisis, the electricity shock is happening right at the time that factories were already racing to meet demand for everything from clothing to stores for the year-end holiday shopping season. So folks get to the grocery store, not to the store, grocery stores, but get to the stores if you want to buy for Christmas. They've been warning us for a long time that we need to be shopping for Christmas now. And of course, we know we've talked about all the time about the soaring raw material cost, these long delays at ports, the shortages of these shipping containers. And now manufacturers are warning that strict measures by Chinese authorities to cut electricity use will slash output in economic powerhouses in several of their provinces. So, and these three big provinces actually account for almost a third of the nation's GDP, Dave.
Yeah, no chump change there for sure. I mean, we know fabric makers in one of the provinces that are suffering production halts have started to hike prices and postpone taking new overseas orders. That's certainly got to be a problem. And the hit to economic growth, of course, is apparently inevitable. Now, too big to fail, Goldman Sachs became the latest to lower their forecast for China for the end of this year, saying recent sharp cuts to production there in a range of the high energy intensity industries adds to significant downward pressures on the outlook there. Nomura Holdings and some other big analytic groups have also either downgraded growth forecasts or have warned of lower growth because of these power disruptions. Hottest topic about China, they say, will soon shift from Evergrande to power crunch. Melody, it looks like it's just another day, another drama.
I'm worn out with drama. I don't care for drama. No drama. You know, these are, again, just signs. It's these things that would have happened. I mean, it would just bring the stock markets just falling like crazy. And now it's like, what's it going to take, you know, to see any major impacts on the markets? But, you know, it's interesting is because, you know, we keep hearing about Chicago and, you know, the amount of crime. And just this weekend, a little 8-year-old boy was killed, shot on his porch, gang related. The gang was after his brother, And, you know, we hear story after story after story. And the sad thing is, you know, these prosecutors around the country, they're dismissing cases to help shrink the court's backlog. So criminals, Dave, kind of have a free ride to do whatever they want to do. Just, you know, because of all this is happening, we hear about it in California. We hear about it in all kinds of areas. Oakland prosecutors dismiss old cases. And even when there's an uptick in violent crime. So what are they doing? What are they thinking? It's absurd. You know, you have, right, Dave? Are you still with us?
I am. Yeah, no, I'm tuned in. I just looking for some related news I saw earlier today, but I couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. I almost equate it. I'm certainly not. I don't want to equate it because murder is far different than pass interference and in football. But I'm not even going to go where I thought I might. But I mean, violent crimes rose by almost 6% last year, according to FBI data. It's first increase in 4 years. Aggravated assaults rose over 12%. So it's a lot of stuff, a lot of passion going on out there. A lot of people attribute it to the pandemic. And you got New Mexican auditor Brian Colon, who's running for state attorney general next year. He says that some experts believe the backlog actually contributed to recent jumps in crime in urban areas. And that's certainly going to have a political impact when some of these district attorneys and attorneys general go to the polls for re-election. People don't like crime waves, especially if they live in the cities where they're being experienced.
And, you know, there was where it would case in point, Charlotte Spencer Merriweather, the DA in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, sees a very real possibility that it could take more than 3 years before some violent crimes even make their way to trial, and actually longer for homicide cases. And, you know, and the longer it takes to get these into court and so forth, sometimes the older a case gets, the tougher it gets to prove in a lot of situations, Dave. So, you know, and I think 6% is, and I'm sure some areas is even higher than 6% when you go into like Chicago and so forth. It's got to be higher than that.
I have no doubt.
Yes. So that's a disturbing trend that, but you really don't hear anybody complaining about it though, do you, Dave? Not so much.
It's interesting. I sometimes lament canceling my local news subscriptions because I miss out on sort of a local perspective. And so sometimes I feel my own viewpoint may get a little bit jaded with either a national or sometimes even international flair. But anyway.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about, you know, Angela Merkel. I mean, they love her in Germany, but, you know, she, you know, was really a big part of open borders and really has, you know, kind of hurt Germany to some degree. But the reckoning has already begun for her conservative alliance. Day after election results pointed to its worst ever showing since the formation at the end of World War II. So, yeah, people are saying, you know, it's there is pressure mounting within the Christian Democratic Union, Christian Social Union bloc after preliminary results show that the center-right alliance achieved 24.1% of the vote compared with 25 for the center-left Social Democratic Party. I mean, this is what they've done, and it's really kind of sad, Dave, to see this all heading in that direction.
Yeah, factionalized government, which tends to be more prevalent in Europe. But, you know, it's sort of pick your poison. I mean, do you want a two-party division like we have here? Or do you want it, some people call it more pluralistic, others call it more factionalized, where you have four or five parties that comprise just a little over, well, in this case, just slightly less than a majority, 50%. Yeah, that's the country where, like in several other Western European countries, there are just a lot of political parties. And there's a longer history and tradition there. So, you know, you see a couple with 24, 25, 26%. On occasion, they get into the 30s and more rarely into the lower 40s. But it's interesting to compare systems like that and what they mean for, you know, civility and politics, strife and division. Certainly, this is something the Germans haven't seen in several decades.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see if particularly older Germans who helped bring Merkel into office 16 years ago, if they're going to start lamenting the demise of the old way. In just a couple of years, we'll see what these sort of, not new parties, but what these new party coalitions are going to be able to do.
You know, the subprime auto lender, guess what? Two former principals of subprime auto lender, Honor Finance, that always cracks me up, Honor Finance, has been charged with defrauding investors by misrepresenting the quality of loans that they packaged into a $100 million security offering. The SEC said, CEO, hey, if they did it before, we can do it now. The SEC said CEO James Collins and COO Robert DeMio misled investors in the Honor Automobile Trust Securitization 2016-1 deal called HATS. They allegedly did that by failing to disclose that they improperly modified loans to hide credit weaknesses in the thousands of auto loans underlying the deal, and of course, all unbeknownst to the investors. So they're at it again, and I guess our break is at it again. We're heading into one. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. freedomradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other business this final segment. You can call her at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. As Melody mentioned last segment, you can get up, sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. As big business continues raking in record profits so far this year, two things are becoming more and more apparent. First, businesses have been investing more on improvements than at any point before the pandemic. Yet, the Delta variant is keeping more companies cautious about how to invest the mountains of cash they have at their disposal. And that led to a return of corporate spending on stock buybacks, which are outpacing, in fact, capital expenditures so far this year. On the one hand, by this year's second quarter, capital spending had staged a historic rebound from before the COVID shutdowns. Oxford Economics lead economist Linda Basur notes the lion's share of increased investment since late 2019 has been tech-related, driven mostly by corporate America's struggle and indecisiveness to support remote work. Top spending increase category was, not surprisingly, on information technology equipment. That's up 20% in the second quarter from the fourth quarter of 2019. Software investment was next. That's up 17%. But with companies raising prices over the past year, many were left hoarding piles of cash and finding limited inventory to buy because of severe supply chain backups. Only yesterday, we saw dozens upon dozens of large container ships, I mean, stacked four, five, six high, sitting idle for miles in the port of New York and others around the country. Now, companies in the S&P 500 held $3.7 trillion in cash and cash equivalents at the end of the second quarter. That's up from $3.5 trillion a year before. Stock buybacks have been their answer. Now, to be fair, shortages in the capital and, well, in people needed for new projects are limiting how much companies can actually take on right now. And that's leaving a lot of excess cash balances earning little to no interest. Buybacks among S&P 500 companies reached $370.4 billion in the first half of this year. That's up 29% compared to last year. Over the same period, capital expenditures reached $337 billion, up a lot more modestly, 4.8%. Notably, buybacks from the top 20 companies made up the majority, or 56% of last quarter's buybacks, up from pre-pandemic historical averages of about 44.5%, but way down from last year's anomaly of 87%. Now, in total, through September 8th, 114 new share repurchase programs have been listed so far in 2021. And we have Dell's, News Corp, McDonald's, and Lockheed Martin all announced new buyback plans just last week. Yes, buybacks, which were down last year, are viewed by company boards and execs as easier to pull back compared with other forms of capital investments like equipment, land, and buildings. The problem with buybacks is they're an inefficient tool for promoting economic growth. In fact, they're often a mirage of that. No question they promote a company's stock price and EPS, plus they help corporate CEOs and CFOs look good with their compensation committees. But beyond that, you have to show me how they benefit our economy. Some analysts now believe that buybacks may reach a peak by early 2022 without any changes in current law. However, they say that new taxes proposed to help pay for President Biden's domestic agenda could provide a longer-term disincentive for increasing buybacks from their current level. More on that in a minute. Now, executives often face a balancing act as they look for the best use of their company funds. Hormel, the company behind Span, Planter Snacks, and other brands, was planning more than $300 million in capital expenditures this year, including an expansion of a sausage-making plant in Omaha, Nebraska. So their CFO, Jim Sheehan, said that target was reduced to about $250 million, thanks to delays in shipments of equipment. He said, it wasn't our intention to decrease our CapEx. It's just been difficult to get tools, adding that the company does plan to increase capital spending next year. Now, home improvement company Lowe's, however, spent about $6.2 billion on buybacks in the first half of 2021. That's over seven times more than the $846 million they spent so far in capital expenditures. Lowe's CEO Marvin Ellison says, we're investing as much as the company can absorb, adding that the main bottleneck for the company is its bandwidth for such projects. Government stimulus efforts, like those launched after the Great Recession and during the current pandemic, are aimed in part at encouraging companies to invest in their businesses. Major corporations, however, have been criticized for using a healthy chunk of those funds on stock buybacks and dividends. Now, many CFOs say they don't expect the short-term economic outlook to affect their spending plans in these areas. However, changes to tax rules, regulations, and other factors could affect their decision-making. One of them is a new bill introduced by Senate Democrats that calls for a 2% excise on buybacks, or treating them as taxable dividends, as a way of raising additional revenues. At first glance, some say that could result in corporations slowing the flood of cash into buybacks that many rightly argue prop up share prices. And if the new tax were enacted, the chances that a 2% tax on buybacks would have a meaningful overall impact on the stock market is probably modest. In any case, 2% on the $370 billion in buybacks enacted so far this year would yield $7.4 billion in government revenue. Now, that's each year, assuming, you know, would continue at the same pace. And that figure's a drop in the bucket in the aggregate for most of the affected multinational corporations. In fact, it makes me wonder if 2% is a high enough figure to discourage more buybacks. But I doubt that discouragement is the primary goal with Congress. No, it's finding the right figure to not discourage future buybacks, but rather to raise additional revenues to help fund the Biden Build Back Better program. And with a 50-50 Senate, every little bit will help get the votes of Senate moderates Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Besides, with government spending and Federal Reserve stimulus on steroids, investors buying on the dip have yet to let the S&P index fall by much more than 4% this year before swooping in to save the day. So, regardless of why many companies have been using stock buybacks, they just don't go far in growing the economy. Instead, big business should focus their collective efforts on improving the labor market, getting more people back to work by increasing wages or benefits, particularly at the lower corporate rungs, thus reversing decades-long growth in income inequality. In the meantime, I'd look for stock buybacks to become as much a headwind for corporate America as its growing debt burden has. And that should be good for gold and silver. Now, we talked a little bit about this at the top of today's program. The biggest trading scandal in the Federal Reserve's 108-year history took down two Fed presidents yesterday. And it may take down their chair. Boston Fed Pres Eric Rosengren, who traded in and out of REITs last year in the amounts of 1,000 to 50,000 at a time, will leave this Thursday. And Dallas Fed Prez Robert Kaplan, whose trading made Rosengren look like a Boy Scout, will step down from his post at the end of the week, Friday. Now, Kaplan was making repeated trades of over $1 million in S&P futures. It's an instrument used during and after stock exchange hours by hedge funds, as well as making over $1 million trades in a litany of individual stocks. Kaplan has a tell on his financial disclosure forms that suggest he was placing at least some of his trades at the Wall Street firm where he worked for 22 years. Too big to fail, Goldman Sachs. When a trader sells a stock instead of the proceeds sitting in cash without earning interest, the proceeds are generally swept into a designated money market fund. Well, the only money market fund sweep account that Kaplan indicates he owns is listed as the GS Financial Square Money Market Fund on his financial disclosure form. GS stands for, yes, Goldman Sachs. And it was listed on his disclosure forms for 2016 through 2000. Watchdogs Pam and Russ Martins of Wall Street on Parade have received no response thus far from Goldman Sachs to multiple inquiries to them over the past few days about Kaplan's possible trading through them. But the Martins point out conclusively that two members of the Dallas Fed Board of Directors, speaking on behalf of the entire Fed Board, released a plainly false statement yesterday regarding Kaplan's relationship with Goldman Sachs. That statement said, upon joining the bank, Rob systematically sold all of his personal holdings related to financial institutions over which the Federal Reserve had regulatory oversight or were otherwise restricted. Rob also conducted his investment activities in accordance with the rules and policies of the Federal Reserve System. Well, the Martins correctly observe that the first sentence is materially false. Kaplan, in fact, held a position offered by Goldman Sachs, a financial institution over which the Federal Reserve had regulatory oversight, at least at the time of his first financial disclosure at the Dallas Fed in 2015. The second sentence is, in the words of the Martins, spurious. That is, Kaplan violated at least two of the prohibitions in the Dallas Fed Code of Conduct. Goldman Sachs is known as a globally systematically important bank, a G-SIB, they call them, that the Fed has had the regulatory oversight on since 2008. Moreover, the Martins point out that the Fed stations its bank examiners at Goldman Sachs because one of them filed a lawsuit stating she was fired by the New York Fed when she wanted to write up a negative examination of Goldman. Well, after Kaplan joined the Dallas Fed, he owned three proprietary products from Goldman Sachs: the GS Financial Square Money Market Fund, the GS Medium Term Managed Corporate Bond Account, and the GS Private Equity Fund 2000. As for the board of directors' statement that Kaplan conducted his investment activities in accordance with the rules and policies of the Federal Reserve System, the Martins point to the Fed's Code of Conduct, the Dallas Fed's Code of Conduct, which says an employee, like Kaplan, may participate in a particular matter of general applicability, such as rulemaking, where the disqualifying financial interest arises from ownership by the employee, his or her spouse, or minor children of securities issued by one or more entities affected by the matter, if 1. The securities are publicly traded or are municipal securities, the market value of which does not exceed A, $25,000 in any one such entity, and B, $50,000 in all affected entities. Or 2. The securities are long-term federal government securities, the market value of which does not exceed $50,000. Well, look. It's known Kaplan was a voting member of the Federal Open Market Committee in 2017 and 2020. His votes helped to set policies of major significance, including cutting the Fed funds rate to zero or near zero in 2020. At the same time, there was nothing at all de minimis about his over $1 million trades that apparently were made in blatant violation of the Fed's code of conduct. Now, in addition, the Dallas Fed code mandates this. Each employee has a responsibility to the bank and to the system to avoid conduct which places private gain above his or her duties to the bank, which gives rise to an actual or an apparent conflict of interest. Kaplan's boss, Jerome Powell, brought further ill repute on the Fed in his press statement yesterday, lavishing praise on Kaplan on his departure. Among other things, he said he's been a passionate and forceful public voice on a wide range of issues, blah, 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 blah. Well, an independent investigation has yet to determine if the brokerage firm that was placing Kaplan's trade engaged in insider trading or duplicated his trades on the belief that Kaplan had insider information. In any event, by lavishing praise on Kaplan, Palace clearly prejudiced the outcome of any Justice Department or SEC investigation, and for that reason, and some others, the Martins believe that Powell needs to be replaced as Fed chair when his term is up in February. In addition, the Dallas Board Fed needs to apologize to the American people for its lapses in allowing Kaplan's trading to continue for more than 5 years. It's unacceptable, ladies and gentlemen. Well, it's also the end of today's program. I return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in Financial Survival. Please be safe out there and have a good evening. Bye-bye.